For Antiwar.com and Chaos Radio in Austin, Texas, I'm Scott Horton, and this is Antiwar Radio. In George Bush's speech last Wednesday, he made some threatening references toward Iran and blamed them for America's problems in Iraq, and mentioned that he's sending carrier strike groups. Now, there's been all kinds of reports in the media, this way and that, about what this really means, whether there's been a real shift in America's policy toward the state of Iran or not. And so to help us understand what's going on in Iran is historian and policy analyst Gareth Porter from IPS News. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks very much, Scott.
Gareth Porter, he writes for IPS, and also you can find his archives at antiwar.com. So I guess I was pleasantly surprised to see your article today. It's running at the top of the frontline section at antiwar.com, where you conclude that all this noise from the administration is basically a bunch of double talk. You say that there are two tiers of talking points coming out of the White House, and that one is for the rubes and the other is for the people who know. So what's going on there?
Well, I think there is a striking difference here between the kind of message that was clearly conveyed by Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice when she was appearing on network television, and particularly on Fox News, being interviewed on the new phase of U.S. policy towards Iraq and also towards Iran. Particularly, I would say, on Fox News, she was suggesting, she was allowing the inference to remain that the United States was going to take resolute action towards what she accused Iran of doing, which is interfering in Iraq by supplying weapons to the anti-coalition forces there.
All options are on the table, she said, right?
That's right. And she was really being a bit imprecise in her answer there. And of course, the interviewer didn't follow up sufficiently to clarify exactly what was going on there. But at the same time, later that day and the following day, there were clarifications by the National Security Council spokesman, by Peter Pace, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Peter Pace. It became clear that the administration was actually being very precise that their response was only going to take place in Iraq. They were not going to go across the border, and it was very very explicit and very clear. So, I mean, this was in response to reporters' questions rather than in response to an interviewer on television. And you know, the vast majority of people now do get their news from television. They don't read newspapers. They don't. They're not paying close attention to, reporters' questions and administration officials' answers to those questions.
So basically, they're talking tough for their base.
That's
but they're
exactly
telling
right.
The establishment, and you say they're telling the Congress, "Don't worry, we're not really going to do anything."
Precisely, and of course, members of the Foreign Relations Committee are going to read those clarifications, and that's going to quiet them down. They're not going to go all out in attacking the administration for threatening to go to war against Iran, because they have that clarification. I conclude from this that in fact the fundamental policy at this point towards Iran has not changed. They are constrained by the knowledge that attacking Iran would be a disastrous. Leave it this way, that there's a high price to be paid, and not the least of that price would be, of course, a very likely response in Iraq. The fact that we have 150,000 troops or 135,000 troops, and that's about to go up, is a major constraint on U.S. policy toward Iran. There's no question about that.
Our guys are basically hostages of the Iranians.
I think that's a fair a way to analyze the situation.
And that may be what's keeping our government from actually going ahead and bombing Iran at this point.
Well, I think that it is a major constraint. I don't think it's the only one. But I think that that there's no doubt that the administration is posturing here because it's in a desperate situation politically in this country. It's you know, the president's approval rating is hovering around 30%. It sometimes dips below that. This is really unprecedented in modern, you know, in the modern post-Cold War situation. The president doesn't want to sort of concede that that he has to reverse his policy on the war. He's unwilling to do that. And so they really are forced to take rather desperate measures in terms of their propaganda line. And bear in mind that this administration has a very, very sophisticated propaganda apparatus. If you go back to the time when they were planning to prepare public opinion for the attack on Iraq in the spring of 2003, they began 9 months ahead of time. Eight or 9 months ahead of time to prepare the public with a very carefully plotted series of media events where they leaked stories to the New York Times, which were very convenient to their propaganda line, beginning with the story of the alleged discovery or the alleged conclusion within the administration that. That Saddam Hussein was purchasing the necessary aluminum tubes for nuclear weapons program.
Now, what do you make of all the ships being sent there? I read reports of minesweepers being sent to the Persian Gulf. Bush said, announced in his speech last week, a whole new carrier strike force.
Well, there's no doubt that is part of their public posturing. I think you have to bear in mind that the use of the movement of carrier task forces is not routine, but certainly a frequently used way of posturing on the part of not just this administration, but the Clinton administration.
So it doesn't necessarily you wouldn't take from that and conclude that they really are serious about airstrikes.
I would say that it's not that it's not evidence of that a decision has been made. Certainly, I don't want to be in the position of saying that this administration is not going to attack Iran, but I don't think that we have now sufficient evidence to say that there's been a change in their policy.
Right.
And I think we have to also bear in mind that it's very likely that this administration would have to go through a series of major political moves to prepare the public opinion for that kind of move. And they're not in that position at this point.
Well, and you mentioned that before, that his approval rating is so low. And on one hand, I can see that, you know, he's in a position of weakness, that he won't be able to launch a war. But then on the other hand, he can... basically, under the War Powers Act, he can bomb anybody for 60 days before Congress can make him stop.
If he can cite an excuse. But it's not a very good move to prepare for war with Iran to say that we are going to confine our response to this alleged Iranian interference.
It just seems that
if
America accidentally just handed southern Iraq over to Iran, one way to fix that would be to make sure that the guys in Iran are our guys in Iran, too. Then that way it's okay that they control Iraq. Or I can see, you know, Bush and Cheney thinking that way, along those lines.
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that they would like to have a regime change in Iran. But I don't know that they really believe that's feasible. I don't think that they believe that's feasible.
And you think that they really are, these two, still bound by reason and reality and such?
Well, that's a very big question. You know, in some sense, obviously, I think they're not bound by reason and reality. They live in their own moral universe, certainly, and I think there's a lot of evidence that Bush's universe is not bound rationally in the same sense that yours or mine. and that his notion that he's going to somehow achieve a position in history that will be very different from the present, than the present political and public assessment of his job, is another universe entirely. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, there are things that they do recognize. There are facts on the ground that they do recognize. I believe that Bush understands that he is losing in Iraq, for example. I think that's a fact that he recognizes, and I think that he's probably recognized that for some time now. Mm-hmm. So I'm more impressed by the degree of cynical posturing that's going on here,
right? And
than I think most other analysts are.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of the cynicism, I guess the main thrust of your article today, or at least something you touch on in your article today, is Bush's accusation that Iran is behind arming America's enemies in Iraq.
Yes, and I think that there is that this is an issue on which the administration has been quite explicitly propagandizing the American public on, manipulating the media for at least a year and a half. This really began in August 2005, and I'm coming out with a piece today on this aspect of the present administration posture publicly. They began manipulating the media in August 2005 when they leaked a story to NBC and ABC, NBC and CBS, I believe it was, in which they talked about intelligence and military officials or Pentagon officials told the networks that they had evidence that the Iran was exporting these advanced IEDs, the sophisticated IEDs, improvised explosive devices,
however,
that were penetrating U.S. armored vehicles.
Now, it's the Sunni insurgency that's using the IEDs against Americans. The American forces haven't been at war against the Iran-backed Shiites since 2004, right?
Well, that is, of course, exactly the problem that they had with that story. At that moment, the IEDs that were penetrating the armor were from from Sunni insurgents, and the Sunni insurgents were the enemy of Iran and their allies within Iraq. And the administration never was able to explain that contradiction. And eventually, they abandoned that argument that Iran was supplying the Sunnis, and they only argued that it was assisting the Shiite militia in the same manner. The main problem is that they have never produced one iota of evidence to support that charge that Iran officially was involved in supplying parts for or entire sophisticated IEDs to any anti-coalition forces in Iraq. There's never been any suggestion that they have had actual concrete evidence of that. So what they have done, the pattern has been over and over again, that they simply suggest, well, you know, that's the only conclusion that one can draw, but we actually don't have any evidence. They admit we don't have any evidence. And now, for the first time, this is something new, on Sunday, Condoleezza Rice said she thinks that there is plenty of evidence to support this. Now, no administration official has ever gone that far before, but still, they have not produced one scintilla of evidence to support it. And if you look at what has been happening in terms of the raids, the two raids that we know about that have been carried out within Iraq to seize Iranian officials, one in late December, and then again the one that coincided with Bush's speech last week, they're both clearly fishing expeditions. What they're doing is basically seizing documents and computers in the hope that they can find something that they can pin on Iran. And that, of course, underlines the point that they don't have anything at this point. They still don't have anything that they can present to the public that will support that charge.
Well, the assertion now just rests upon its vagueness, right? That they're not saying it's the Sunnis are being armed by Iran. They're just saying, well, the people who are murdering Americans are being armed by Iran, and never specific as to who they're actually talking about.
You're right. There is always a degree of ambiguity about exactly what they're claiming. Even Condoleezza Rice does not say specifically that the Iranian government is behind this. They always talk about an Iranian involvement. Now, undoubtedly, there are Iranians who have been involved in sending, you know, in trade of parts that go into IEDs. There's no doubt about that.
Well, sure, but what you're saying is it's a nation of millions. It's not the government
of Iran.
Yeah,
there's a porous, basically open border between Iran and Iraq. So, you know, it's clear that all kinds of trade goes on back and forth across the border, mostly imports from Iran to Iraq.
Right. Well, and we know who the Iranian government is backing. They're backing the same guy that George Bush is backing, Abdulaziz Hakim and the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution.
Well, that's right. He is their closest ally, no question about it. And there's a rivalry between the Mahdi army and al-Hakim, and it's the Mahdi army that's accused of using IEDs against the British. So, you know, there's still some serious problems with the analysis, analytically, with the charge that Iran is trying to interfere here by giving IEDs to the Mahdi army.
Now, Gareth Porter from IPS News, I know that you're in a big hurry and have to go, but I want to ask you real quick before you do about Iran's peace offer of 2003.
Yes, I mean, you know, the question that has been, of course, discussed a lot, well, not enough, but some, over recent months, is, you know, are the Iranians interested in negotiating with the United States, not just on Iraq, but including Iraq, as well as on the nuclear issue and on issues of regional security, including, of course, ultimately Israel's security. And the answer, I believe, is yes. I just heard Ambassador Pickering testifying before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in the last couple of days. Pickering quoted an Iranian observer, I think someone that he knew, who said that, you know, the pattern in the past has been whenever Iran was interested in negotiating, the United States was not interested, and vice versa. And he observed that right now his Iranian contact believes Iran is interested. The United States, of course, is not interested. I think that is correct. And the reason that I say that is because the current leadership of Iran in terms of national security has made it clear in various ways over the past year that they want to strike a deal with the United States. And what they hope to get out of that deal is recognition of Iran's security interests in the Middle East. Those security interests include, you know, not having to worry about an American attack, of course, on Iran. That's part of the deal. That has to be part of the deal. But it also includes some sort of symbolic recognition that Iran is indeed a regional power.
And then what do they give up in return for that?
Pardon?
What do they give up in return for that?
Well, I think that, you know, Iran has not made any decision about manufacturing a nuclear weapon. It's way too soon to say that Iran is determined to go ahead and make a nuclear weapon. I think most of the objective analysts of Iranian policy agree that is not a foregone conclusion. And I think that we can, in fact, freeze them into a position where they would agree to very intrusive inspection regime, which would put them in a position where they could not go ahead and would not go ahead with a nuclear weapon. And I think we could commit them to that position as part of a deal. So that they would agree to very limited enrichment, which would fall short of what is necessary for them to go ahead and have a nuclear weapons program. So now, I think that's part of the deal.
Now, my understanding is that basically what happened was in the spring of 2003, they sent a message from a Swiss diplomat saying that not only were they willing to abandon basically Hamas and Hezbollah in the Palestinian conflict, but they were willing to recognize Israel at the 67 borders. They were willing to sign any additional protocol to their safeguards agreement that the IAEA could throw at them. They were basically saying, look, we'll do anything you say. And Bush told them, forget it.
That's precisely right. I mean, they were willing to make significant concessions to American interests on Israel, on nuclear weapons, and certainly, you know, to recognize the need for a regional agreement with Israel along the lines of basically the Saudi 2002 position, which the entire Arab world now has agreed to. They basically were willing to accept that as their position. And that has been, by the way, a position that Iran has embraced in various international fora over the years, very quietly. It hasn't been well publicized, but this has been something that this is not the only time, not the first time that they have agreed to that position. Of course, you know, that requires that Israel make its own peace agreement with the Palestinian entity as well, to recognize the Palestinian state and to reach agreement with the Palestinian state. So it's by no means a one-sided concession on their part. But definitely this was a very, very forward-looking a position that was taken in the secret memo to the United States. It was a reasonable basis for discussions. There's really no excuse for the United States to dismiss that offer and to refuse to negotiate on the basis of such an offer.
Now, let me ask you real quick. It's really, I guess, directly related there. What does this say about how insane and crazy and impossible to deal with the mullahs, Khamenei, and his ruling council of mullahs?
Well, you know, I'm sure that there, I mean, we know that there are plenty of mullahs who are very hardline, who believe that Iran should secede from the NPT, the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and who would, you know, would certainly not agree to compromise on Israel, and in various other ways would be hostile to this kind of an agreement. But the fact is that the people who have been running Iranian national security policy for the last 20 years, basically, and there has been a good deal of continuity in that regard, as far as the leadership of military and national security leadership of Iran, and even Khamenei, the supreme leader, who's listening to these people, who in fact was behind, from everything we know, was behind the 2003 approach to the United States. These people are rational, calculating, and cautious individuals. And you know, there's no excuse for sort of claiming that Ahmadinejad is irrational and therefore we can't deal with Iran. That simply doesn't coincide with the facts. Iranian foreign policy has not fundamentally changed since Ahmadinejad came into power, despite the fact that he has issued very unwise rhetorical statements about Israel. There is no fundamental change in Iranian foreign policy.
All right, Gareth Porter, he's a historian, wrote an armful of books about Vietnam and Cambodia, and is an investigative reporter for IPS News. Thank you very much for your time today,
sir. It's been a pleasure, Scott. Thanks for having me.
This has been Anti-War Radio for January 16th, 2007. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Tomorrow, Chris Floyd.